And action.
Good reaction. So welcome everybody. This is BNP Weekly episode 132. It is June 21st. This is, by the way, the last episode before of our summer break. So we're heading to a season. Is it season three, Walter?
Yes, we are.
So we need to actually leave this or end this call. It might be a four. We need to end this session with a cliffhanger. Let's come back on that one. Now, in the BNP Weekly, I always talk about the latest on Microsoft 365 in the platform and in general, and then the articles. And typically, we do have a visitor in the show as well. Before we go there, my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a program manager in the Microsoft 365 platform level. And with me as a co-host is Waldek. Who are you?
Hi, everybody. My name is Waldek Mazdegas, and I am cloud developer advocate for Microsoft 365. And as Vesa said, today we have a guest with us, Nicole Woon. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning. Nice to see you all.
Excellent. Thank you, Nicole, for joining us. Can you kind of recap who are you and what are you doing for a living?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Nicole. I am a program manager on the SharePoint team. Been working on a bunch of different features, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit. I've been at Microsoft for about 6 years now, so started right out of school and just have had a chance to jump through a couple different roles. So I was a support engineer originally, actually on SharePoint, so that was my first taste with the product. And then a couple of years into it, I switched into a PM role on the Windows team and then found myself over here on the SharePoint team. So it's been a really fun ride. Outside of work, I enjoy trying new restaurants. I am based in the Seattle area, and so I actually keep a spreadsheet of all the restaurants that I've gone to. I'm over 600 and counting, so I love trying all sorts of cuisine, all sorts of food. I find it's a really fun way to just, one, connect with people, and two, you know, get some good eats. So, yeah, it's been really, really fun so far.
That's really, really cool. Actually, you said something super interesting immediately on your historical thing, and I know Waldek would be jumping on this one as well. And now you said that you started as a software engineer, right? So writing code. What made you make a decision to leave to be a PM? And can you talk about the differences between the roles for external audience as well? Because I think it's not super clear. Well, why would you be a PM rather than software engineer and vice versa?
Yeah, exactly. So, spoiler alert, I never took a computer science class in college. So I think jumping into a support engineering role was a little bit scary, but I was really active in the Society of Women Engineers as a college student, and I still am active as a professional today. And I remember at the time, one of the pieces of advice that someone gave me was to kind of start as an engineer, see what that was like, and then be able to make a decision later down the road. And so started out that way. What I did as a SharePoint support engineer was to work directly with customers. So anytime someone would run into issues, let's say, you know, SharePoint search went down or they were trying to set up publishing on their classic admin site, we were able to work directly with them. And so we'd have issues come into a queue, coordinate with them, and then hopefully fix their issue. So I learned a lot about getting to learn SQL, to learn how to use PowerShell for the first time. It was pretty stressful with, you know, 15 to 20 cases at a time, but I thought it was a really good way to just kind of jump into the deep end and learn about the product. And I learned a lot about customer empathy as well, which was so powerful. And I think it served me really well in my PM role today. But what kind of shifted my perspective and made me want to go into PM was just the proactive side of it, being able to actually work directly on the product, being able to create something that people would use on a daily basis and hopefully improve their processes that they had to go through. And so for me, it was a really cool way to shift into that role, get to learn more about it from that end of things, and, you know, be able to have empathy for our partners and customers as we go along.
I did set it in the wrong way. I said first software engineer, but it was a support engineer, which is actually really, really good as well. So, but that's a good that you corrected me on that one, because actually being a support engineer, like you said, it's all about empathy.
It's even harder.
About people and understanding customers, and then understanding that pressure when they're yelling to you through a written text in a tool, and you're trying to solve the situation, and you understand their pressure and their challenges what they have. So it certainly is a great way to be a better PM, because then you are truly connected with the customers. You understand that background. So
Exactly.
The one thing that I wanted to ask is like, how do you, because SharePoint is this huge product. It's like elephant, right? It's massive. As you said, it's everything from SQL to
it's getting more
web,
agile.
It's even bigger now.
Yeah, we see
absolutely.
It more as a panther. No, just.
How do you learn? Like being in support, you have to know everything about everything, really. So how do you get started? How do you get into it and learn the thing?
Yeah, I was super nervous about that when I entered because, like I said, it was my first taste with SharePoint. Like I had used it in internships before, but you know, to store my files, and that was about it. Like I don't even think we used Pages at the time, and so I think for me it was a little bit intimidating. But one, they had a really great training program, so I actually trained for like 3+ months purely to learn the product. So part of it was, you know, getting to know about Microsoft, getting to know our coworkers and our teams, but then really diving into one, like the Microsoft product suite, and then specifically SharePoint. So there was a lot of just kind of ramping up that went on there. And then I remember the day that I took my first case, I was so nervous. Like I didn't know like how I would be able to answer it, but we have a really great support system. So I not only had like specific mentors that I worked with, but it was also a whole like suite of people. So the way that we had kind of coordinated it was, you know, some people focus on admin, some people focus on performance, some people focus on search. And so if I had a specific question in that space, I could reach out on Teams and be like, hey, like, what do I do in this case? And so because you had, you know, 5-10 people who had experience already in that space working on this for years, they were just so great about being like, hey, have you tried this? Did you try running this tool? And so from there, I was able to kind of evolve and grow my skill in the space. I'm still learning. Like, I feel like you've mentioned SharePoint is such a huge product. I'm like, oh, I've never heard that we had that feature before. So yeah. It's always fun to be like, now I learned something new.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess it also, in this role, like you get to hear about like every edge case there is, right? Because like there is like the one thing that I recall back from doing my work SharePoint, especially on premises, like there was the official way to use it, and then there was the reality what customers actually did with it. And in there you get to meet like all edge cases, like, hey, we are going to use it in this very unmanned way or unique way, like that nobody envisioned, and it doesn't work. And then it's like, so doesn't it work because it's broken, it's not meant to be used, or it's not envisioned, or just like there's something missing in the puzzle, right? So it's like there is, I can imagine, like very hard position to also be in, because like you need to know so much more beyond what the product is intended to do as opposed to like how that customer uses it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I would remember I would get a case and be able to figure out how to fix it. And then I get a similar case and be like, oh, okay, same steps, but no, not at all.
they
set it up
easy,
in a completely different way in their tenant. And I supported on-prem SharePoint 2010 and 2013 at the time. And so I thought that was a really cool evolution when I finally came to the product side of SharePoint, where I was like, wow, like I hadn't even heard about modern SharePoint before. And so it was just really cool to see how things had evolved and how they had taken customer feedback to make it, you know, approachable for the most advanced developer, but also for someone who's brand new to the product. And so that just really resonated with me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I coming back on the elephant and the panther discussion, I think what we're doing right now is we're kind of making it more approachable for everybody. So taking away of some of the features, sure. And people are slightly always angry when we're doing that. But at the same time, it's streamlining the product for the best purpose usage. So basically, it's always the story of, hey, you have X amount of resources, where do you put them? Do you have, if you have 6 or 8 or 10 baskets and you need to divide them between all of them, or do we focus on a 1 or 2 baskets, which will be the ones, and then let the other products, for example, let's say Microsoft Teams is now taking over collaboration together with Teams and provide even better experience. It's an interesting transition comparing where we were within the 2010 or 2013 timeframe for sure. So, and seeing that transition is probably quite interesting for you as well. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Now, on the product side, you mentioned that you are a PM, and of course, I know what are the features which you're owning. But what is the feature and capability which you're owning right now, and what are you actually working on?
Yeah, so one of my major features are SharePoint site templates, which has been a really exciting way to, you know, onboard those new users and make it a lot easier for them to set up their sites. But also, you know, for people who are maybe more experienced to have just these really beautiful templates that are there for inspiration. And so this kind of all stemmed out of a lookbook conversation. And so Visa is probably very familiar with this, where we had brought the lookbook to a Ignite conference, I believe, a couple years back. And a customer in the audience had asked one of the people on stage, hey, is there a way that we could get this in product? And so that started off these discussions where we figured, hey, can we bring this like lookbook capability with these beautiful sites and beautiful templates that people can provision in their sites directly into the process of creating a site? And so that kind of started a series of conversations, and before you know it, here we are. So really excited to have that rolling out to customers very soon. We're starting out with 9 different templates. So we have 5 on communication sites and 4 on team sites. They range across a variety of scenarios, but through a lot of our user research, we were able to identify some of the highest use cases and just being able to have these templates that give you a chance to see what SharePoint is all about. So our templates are comprised of pages, of different library folders, of lists. And so you can see the different ways that you can interact with a SharePoint site. So we try and make it really easy for you to get started if you know, have never used SharePoint before, but can get started quickly and on the right foot.
Absolutely. And of course, this is just the start, what is getting rolled out right now. So it's mm-hmm. the kind of the version 1.0 of the new site templates. Now I have to come back on that when we chatted before we started recording. Why did we change the name again? Because some MVPs were again asking that this name changes. Now we call them site templates, but they were called site designs at some point, and then they were called site templates before. And do you have insights on why did we decide to change it again?
Yeah, so I think at least when I've talked with people, site templates just resonates a lot with, you know, when you're applying something to your site, you think of it as a template. For us, I think it's something where we wanted to make sure that there was consistency across the in-product offering. So the templates that are provided from Microsoft, as well as the templates that all of you in the community or our customers are creating. And so just wanted to have some coherency there.
So and it makes perfect sense to use the generalized term because, hey, you're applying a template to a site. So therefore, let's call it site template. So I think that the old decision when we introduced the site design term was just that we wanted to differentiate technically. It was a more technical discussion. So we used to have site templates and site definitions. So we needed to come up with a new term to avoid a reference to that old technology, which wasn't super, let's say, usable or super reliable. So, but I guess we are,
right?
Yes, I guess we're passed on that already. So it's 2021 and now we can reset the naming for sure. So should be good. Now, Nicole, also let's talk about slightly your historical things and how did you end up actually working in IT? Let's go back in time for that.
Yeah, so I touched a little bit on my college career before. I, as I mentioned, I've never taken computer science class. So that was something that was, I was like, how could I end up at Microsoft down the line? But what I went and attended the University of Pennsylvania, based in Philadelphia, and loved my experience there. I was actually part of a program called the Management and Technology Program. So it was 1 degree from our engineering school and 1 degree from our business school. And so I loved that it bridged that those two worlds of business and technology together. So we had a chance to really explore and figure out which way we wanted to go. And so for my time there, I actually did 3 degrees. So I did 2 bachelor's and then 1 master's. So my bachelor's were in bioengineering and my bachelor's was in entrepreneurial management, and then my master's is in mechanical engineering. So yeah, how do any of these actually go into one cohesive experience? I also had internships that were not in like the tech industry necessarily. They were actually in the financial industry. So I worked at a few different financial firms, but in their technology departments. So that was actually my first taste of what a business analyst or project manager type of role was. I really liked the way that you got to collaborate with a lot of different people. You got to work on projects that, you know, shaped how a strategy or shaped the direction of something. And so that part of it was really exciting to me. And then when it came time to actually look at my job opportunities after graduating, Microsoft reached out to me for a position on their support engineering team. And so this is why like I value being part of the Society of Women Engineers so much, because it afforded me these opportunities. Like that's where Microsoft reached out to me. That's where I scored like another internship. And I think just the ability to make those connections and get to see a community that was outside of my college was so valuable. But yeah, went through the interview process and fortunately did well enough that they let me in. And then I graduated in December, had 6 months off to just enjoy, and then started up at Microsoft in that support engineering role that we talked about earlier.
And to be fair, even though you have three university graduate, what is the right term? You graduated. You have three. What is it? Two bachelor's degrees. And two master's degrees. Thank you.
Yeah.
But not in software science. But it's all the sounded all related on, let's say, human handling, coordination, planning, all of that stuff, which is precisely what the BMs are doing anyway. It's all about coordination of people, not in the sense that you're just coordinating people, you do that, then X and Y and Z. It's rather communication, having discussions, making sure that everybody is up to date, aligning with other projects and organizations, and then feature crews and all of that stuff. So there's a lot of like hands and a lot of things to be coordinated.
Exactly. As a PM, it was so refreshing just to be able to meet other people at Microsoft with completely different backgrounds. Like I definitely had the stereotype that everyone, you know, studied computer science and then went straight into IT. But I met PMs that had an English background, or PMs that wanted to go to med school and then ended up switching gears. And so it means that you're going to have a more diverse opinion of thought and just a perspective when you're approaching products. And it's so valuable.
Yeah. And then, based on all of that studying and then the support engineering, you just kind of landed up on, I want to actually define how the product is being done. So, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. When I switched into the PM role, that was a really cool way because one, you got to learn, you know, what being a PM was. I think even within Microsoft, the definition of a PM can be very different from team to team. Yeah. And so I think that first role showed me that I really valued working on UX features and UX experiences. I loved being able to collaborate with designers and be able to like literally point to a design and say, hey, like, what if we tweaked this, or would this help improve a customer's flow through it? And that was also where I got my first taste of why accessibility matters for products too. And so I was the accessibility champ for that particular product. I worked on the People application for Windows. So that's essentially your contacts list across Windows devices. And I think for such like a simple concept, you know, your address book, there's actually so much that goes into it. So you think about, you know, linking contacts, if you had duplicate contacts, for example. There's just a lot that goes into it. The accessibility piece of it and understanding that we have such a range of customers that use our products was such a great way to learn how to, you know, see how people use keyboard shortcuts or how Narrator is used. And I think as someone who hasn't always needed to use that, like it was really valuable to step into to those shoes and be able to learn that way.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense. And that comes back on, again, understanding more broadly on the, that's actually really good to have that kind of a experience as part of the career development, because it's not just concentrating on executing something and delivering, let's say, a technical feature. It's also, once again, understanding the human behavior, which is such a huge thing in software and business, because if we don't build our solutions for humans, who's going to use them? So, of course, that's
exactly.
Our primary target. Quite often. There are exceptions, of course. But it's certainly that those experiences really, really matter. And even your background as a software and coming back on the supportability engineer, it's almost the same as me and Waldeck. We used to be more as a consultants. I don't know if Waldeck was actually a consultant role title as such, but some sort of a way of handling and having a discussion with customers. So
yeah,
it's still learning from those discussions and learning the human behavior, and then realizing that even the highest, let's say, directors and whoever they are, they're just humans. And if you can have a really valuable discussion with anybody as long as you're open for it. So,
yeah, I think just that human element too is so powerful, because when you get down to it, like even if you're talking with an exec, for example, you know, they have families, they have, you know, experiences outside of work. And so just being able to build those connections is always really powerful, and makes you appreciate, you know, the different ways that people approach life.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, coming back on the human side partly, or let's talk about slightly diversity, because you're also a woman in IT. We had few people in the show, of course, who are women. Sorry.
English is hard.
Yes. But any tips what you can actually have for other women in IT, or let's say women who are considering moving to the IT? What would be your learnings on this career path and recommendations on that? Because we would obviously want to have complete equality in the industry, but we don't have that yet. So how can we improve this? Putting you on the spot.
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, don't be afraid of trying. Like if I look at my own experience, I never would have thought that I would have come to Microsoft. But to know that people believed in me and that I could learn and be able to grow during my time here was really valuable. So I think being like going to school, like that teaches you how to think. And it's okay if you're studying something that's completely unrelated to what you end up in as a career. And so for me, it was just really great to be able to explore that side of my skill set and realize, hey, I really like this part of what I work on. I really don't like this part of what I work on. And so being able to identify that has been so helpful for me as I've navigated my career. I think also just being able to trust your gut is really important. I had never really understood the value of it until I was going through some interviews and just realizing how people could be inclusive and not inclusive. And so I won't get into, you know, specifics there, but I just left one of my interviews, I remember, with a bad taste in my mouth. And even though the role sounded great, I just knew long term it was not going to be a great fit just based on the interactions that had happened. And so being able to recognize that can help you down the line. And even though I was nervous because I was basically, you know, giving up that job offer to wait for another one, it worked out in the end, because that next job offer was to come join the SharePoint team as a PM. So here I've been for a few years. I'm glad that the timing worked out and I was able to make it work. But for me, like trusting your gut has been just a super powerful way to know, hey, like something is off, and to kind of think through it and recognize what exactly is off there. And then I think third, just leaning into your kind of support groups and mentors and sponsors whenever you need that help. A really great way that I've learned through SWE that they phrase it is essentially your own board of directors. And so this means that you're not necessarily going to one person for all of your advice seeking or the problems that you're going through. You have an entire board of them. So maybe I go to someone for my SharePoint specific like issues. How do I release this feature, or how can I approach the research part of it? But there's another person that I go to if I want more, you know, SWE career advice for Society of Women Engineers. Like I want to advance in that space too, and learn a lot more about how they approach D&I initiatives and how I can make my entire community a better place culturally. So lots of different people that I'm able to interact with. It's nice to have those that are external to your team as well, just because they've gone through different experiences. They can offer this kind of neutral third-party opinion, which is always very valuable. And I know that the people that I've connected with and kind of have in my own board of directors are, you know, in my court, they're ready to back me whenever I have a question. So for me, that's been so valuable, and especially as a woman in tech, to know that, you know, both all people can help support me. Like, it's not just women. And I found some of my best sponsors and advocates have been men as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for someone who is new to a job, or maybe someone who isn't yet at a job and they're looking for a job, like, how would they go about finding these mentors or their board of directors?
Yeah, it definitely depends. And there's always, you know, no one size fits all. I think for me, I found a lot of them through causes that like brought me joy and that brought me excitement. And so one, like you'll obviously have people on your team. There are sometimes programs that you can sign up for. I think in OneDrive and SharePoint, we have a mentorship program that Kathy runs. And so that was a great way to connect with some mentors there on the product side. And then I think some of them kind of developed naturally. So through kind of the cultural work that I do, I enjoy participating in a lot of the women's employee resource groups at Microsoft. And then I also help as a champ for some of our early and career communities as well. So that's been a great way to connect with people that have similar interests. And then I realize, hey, like, I really want to learn from you in this respect. And so I'm able to have those conversations and grow and just get to know how they approach things. And so having those reference points is really helpful because you're able to see the different paths that people have gone through, learn from them, and hopefully incorporate that into your own style and your own opinion.
Yeah, that's the one of the cool things is Microsoft is that quite rarely anybody is going to be not open for a coffee or a remote chat or a 30 minutes here and there. So everybody's kind of open for it. And then if there's a good match for mentorship, of course, you can find those people as well. So
I remember
definitely they're open for helping.
Yeah, exactly. I remember as an intern on one of my at another company, I kind of took it upon myself, like across the 10, 12 weeks that I was there, I was going to try and do one-on-one with every single person on my team. And I think there were about 25 or 30 people on the team, but, you know, spaced out over 10 weeks, that's like about 3 a week. And so I thought it was very helpful because some people that I wouldn't even have considered talking with initially, I got to learn so much from that. And they all had a different approach on how they navigated their careers, what they valued. And so to just get that insight and kind of take that input was helpful for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, before we go to the articles, I have to ask, what's your aspirations? What's going to happen next? What have you thought about? Or is it just, let's do this and let's see what happens?
Yeah, I am a pretty flexible person, I would say. So a lot of opportunities are like I just happen to find or I'm lucky that they find me. I'm on the site template side. I'm really excited to continue expanding upon that, you know, hopefully adding more templates, adding more functionality to make it just even easier for customers. One of the other initiatives that I've run within the team is Craft. And so that's been our goal to just release really high quality, well-crafted products. And I think that was just a neat way to complement some of my feature work with more kind of process and program work within our team. And so I am looking forward to continuing to operationalize that, to continue raising awareness with our team and just growing our focus on building these well-crafted products. So that's kind of what I'm looking at on the career side, but I think I'll be a PM for a while. It's been fun.
Yeah. But coming back on the Craft, that's actually a really good point because again, being a while for Microsoft and being a while in working in SharePoint, it's been interesting to see the transition, first of all, from on-premises to the cloud, and then being more, let's say, design and UX driven in the cloud as well. Having to see that we establish a design organization, a research organization, we establish those teams, we start using them, and getting more structure on the execution as well. So making sure that the product is not just coming off with, hey, this is a good idea and let's do a UX, but no. Let's make sure that whatever we come up with is consistent with the other stuff that we're doing. And the Craft work, what is it called? You have a term what to use internally. It's not Craft work. It's just, what is the monthly summary is what you're sending on the Craft?
Oh, I send Craft newsletters. I mean, I just refer to it as Craft.
Yes. But just to avoid that it doesn't actually overlap with Microsoft Craft, because that's obviously a different thing. But this is really about the UX, design and experiences and quality in the experience from an end-user perspective.
Yeah, and but I guess craft,
craft
was an
right?
abbreviation
it's like
from
craft, not a graph. It's craft as in art, right?
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, it was our abbreviation from craftsmanship. So
yes,
there you go.
Yeah, and I think for it's just been cool to see not only that it's something that every discipline needs to be accountable for. Like, it's not something that you just look at our researchers and designers and say, hey, make it crafted, and then it just blows down. But for our engineers crafted. To care about it, when we're doing bug bashes, to like call out issues that you find and raise them. If we get issues from customers down the line, you know, actually fixing those once they're out in the wild. And the earlier that we can kind of bake craft into the process is so helpful so that they don't reach our customers later down the line. So we do things such as experience reviews. We'll do pre-experience reviews. We make sure that our prototypes go through different, are reviewed by all different disciplines. And so when you have that perspective in the room that maybe doesn't always interact with it at the beginning, you can catch things a lot quicker than if you waited to the last minute.
I think the experience reviews is a good example of a process which might first freak out people when you have few of them first, and then you realize that this is super, super helpful. And because, like, I want to ship. Okay, cool. Let's do an experience review. And then you have 20 people in a room or remotely doing an exercise and validating the experience. And then basically say, I don't know, something doesn't feel right, and I don't understand how this works. And then the people flag that, and then you need to go and revisit that particular feature or a task from an end-user perspective. It's actually a really cool way of having a structural way of improving whatever shipping. So,
yeah, and for everyone to have a voice, like for someone who might be brand new to the team to be able to raise their hand and say, hey, I noticed something, but also the person that's a 20-year veteran, everyone is equal in that room. And I think that is just really empowering too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, let's actually jump to the articles on this week, and then we'll come back on while the community come up with some sort of a cliffhanger for the season four.
Yes.
Putting you on
the next
spot.
Season, Vesa will get another dog. No.
No more dogs. No. No more dogs. No more cats. No more dogs. We have two of both, so that's enough. Now that the second dog is finally getting over on understanding how they should be behaving. No more dogs. So training a puppy is always hard. Anyway, so let's start with this one. And so relatively new thing, a new hybrid work innovations in Microsoft Teams Rooms Fluid and Microsoft Viva. And this is really around the hybrid way of working, remote way of working when you are in the room, and what's the latest innovation on there. A lot of the bits and pieces are coming together, like the Fluid framework is making things happen. Well, this is about white space and whiteboard actually together collaborating. But a lot of our products are heading to the direction where we can have a live collaboration directly in documents and files and all of that stuff, like in here, adding a table. And that is actually a really cool thing. For the Fluid, we've been building on that one for a while, and now we're finally getting visible signs on that one in the product as well. Or having a live, is it the OneNote? I think it's OneNote. No, it was a OneNote. I think it was OneNote. So anyway, trying to catch on always and where they are. But a lot of new features and announcements related on this one. So really great blog post on that one. Now, this one, new experience is coming to Microsoft Teams to allow everybody to participate on an equal footing. So basically, related on that announcement, that was the higher level announcement. This is the lower level announcement in Microsoft Teams related on the different device improvements in the Microsoft Teams side. A lot of investments. And that, by the way, for internals, I know Nicole is using this all the time in the weekly meetings, but for gradually getting it released externally, which is really, really cool. And we can see it in the community calls. It's a nice reaction when there's 200 people in the community call and you get a hearts and clapping fans and all of that sound. And then you can see that live happening. That's always a really, really cool. So small things, but these things do matter. So making us feel more humans, even though we're working remotely. So. And a lot of additional things.
Are you trying to say that we are less human because we work remotely?
You're always quoting me.
Not what I meant.
I'm just a bot. I don't actually exist. When have you first the last time seen me physically? There we go. So you never know.
I'm just waiting until the moment that Teams adds elevator music when you have those long pauses before meeting.
Oh yeah. That should be coming actually. Wow. I think it should be. So I think the biggest challenge before we talk about that, biggest challenge with those things is more on, okay, so do we bring the set of music and how we can make music or buy music which is not copyrighted? I think those are the biggest problems always on music and videos. So anyway, so it definitely will be coming. Now, on the Microsoft Developer Blog side, Microsoft Assignments API for Microsoft Graph is now generally available. English is really hard. We actually later this week on 24th of June 2021, depending on when you're watching or listening this, we actually have a live demo of this stuff covered in a community call, which is really cool as well. Latest podcast from Microsoft 365 developer side of the house, Viva Connections with John Nukin and Luca Bandinelli. So basically focusing on what is the Viva Connections from an extensibility perspective. I have to say, Luca does not look like that. That picture is
anymore?
Really old, like 15 years old. People probably wouldn't recognize Luca from that picture, but it is pretty old, or 20 years old even, the picture. So. Now, Nicole, you actually shared with us the latest video related on SharePoint site templates, latest features and experiences. Do you want to actually recap? You kind of mentioned what's the latest, but what's the status? We have 9 out-of-the-box templates in the initial release. Can they be modified? What about custom templates and all of that?
Quick recap. So for our out-of-box templates, they once you apply them to a site, it will automatically create everything that you need it to do to start running. So pages, the lists, the libraries, so that you can just, you know, get started immediately and then start adjusting your site to your needs. So that's something that is done really easily. You can access it from the site settings area. There's also a dialog that will pop up your first time coming to a brand new site. So you always have that as an option as well. But that will take you to the template gallery where you can review all of the options, look at a preview page to see what elements are part of each of those templates, and then go ahead and apply from there. The customer site templates are also accessible. There's a second pivot that is there. So at the top of our template gallery, you'll see a pivot from Microsoft, but also a pivot from your organization. So if you have anything, that it may have originally been a site design, or you're creating a new customer site template, that's where that'll show up. So really easy to apply.
Now I need to jump on something that you said. It used to be a site designs, now it's a site template. So basically the site designs are site templates, or are they being transformed to be site templates?
Yeah, so all your existing site designs will still work. So instead of the entry point where we used to have it, which I think was site designs and site settings, now you can access that from your organization tab. Yeah. So kind of seamlessly brought into the experience.
Everything will be there. Nothing's going to take it away. It's the same thing, slightly renamed. And that's pretty much it. Cool.
Yep.
Excellent. So good summary. Now, Waldeck, you had a blog post last week related on exploring Microsoft 365 extensibility options, opportunities with Microsoft 365 extensibility lookbook. Quick summary on this, right?
Yeah, so during the last Ignite, we launched this thing called Microsoft 365 extensibility lookbook, and it's meant to be an interactive gallery that allows you to see what kind of options you have available on Microsoft 365 to extend it to your needs, whether it's building tabs on Microsoft Teams or bots, extending SharePoint and whatnot, basically trying to help you to understand what you can do to work better, smarter, more efficiently, and then us giving you a single place to see all of that, as opposed to having like different things per product. So that is meant to bring everything into a single place. And from there, you will get access to additional resources like videos, learn content, docs, and whatnot.
Yeah. Good summary. Thank you for that one. Really, really good. And there will be more, let's say, promotion announcement for sure on this one. I just actually, by the way, noticed that this one already has 3,900 views. So really good. So people are interested on this model. So this is basically kind of a piggybacking on the lookbook, the Microsoft lookbook model, the SharePoint lookbook model. And then we just pivoted that to be on the extensibility side. And we've been building that together with Microsoft Teams organization for quite a long time, actually. That's now it's starting to be in an okay level. And there's always, the content can be always improved, though. That's always the classical thing. Now, let's move in here. Some more technical development side stuff. Some MTT React code tour. Baldek, what is this all about?
So Microsoft Graph Toolkit is a collection of components that you can use to connect your app to Microsoft 365. And typically where we build some tech and we create material to help you to learn it, especially on the dev side, like we will have docs, we will have modules that will walk you through, like, here's how you can create an app. And then you'll have instruction steps like copy-paste this code, put it in your app. Now copy-paste this code and put that in your app there, right? And so it's very much driven from this instruction doc. And like you basically need to work like side by side with your app and the instructions. So in here, we try a different approach to it where we provide instructions, we overlay instructions on top of your app. So you work in this case in VS Code. You work in your app and you get instructions overlaid like, hey, the next step is to add this thing to your app that will allow you to do X, Y, and Z, and click here to get the code in your app. So you no longer need to jump between two screens, two sections, but instead you get everything in single experience in the place where you already work on the code, you already type the code, and in there directly within the context of your work, you will get the necessary instructions. And with that, we hope that that will give you a richer way to learn code. So that's something that we are experimenting with, and we'd love to hear from you whether that's something you like, whether that's something you would like us to do more, because currently we only have one tutorial available for React, and you can use MGT or even Graph or PowerShell or whatever you can think of in many different ways. So if this is how you would love to learn, tell us about it so that we can prioritize doing more of this work.
This is almost like in the product, and Onikel knows this really well. Every now and then we introduce a new feature, we do those panels, which is, hey, have you seen? This is bubbles, how this works. If you click this one, bubbles, and then it basically say, always ignore, go away, whenever that typical reaction, right? But that's a good way of kind of, hey, this is here because, and the same way for the development as well. So it's kind of a cool way of doing that. Now, moving on the article, so on the Microsoft PMP community blog, save an email attachment to a custom path with Power Automate. So basically, when an email arrives, how do you then save the existing attachment to a location, for example, for saving information? And a nice blog post related on those steps with Power Automate. So pretty, and a video as well. So thank you, Damien, on that one. How to use Send as an HTTP request to SharePoint in Power Automate. Power Automate usage is growing a lot. And Chandani is once again writing a really good blog post, One Step at a Time, explaining how to automate things. So really, really cool stuff as well. So great on that. And then we had from Albert Jan Scott, run reports on your tenant using CLI for Microsoft 365 and Azure Container Instances. That sounds complicated. Waldek, I'm putting you on the spot.
No, it's not. So actually, like in this case, imagine you want to have a report, like every morning you want to get a report from something. And in this case, yeah. I guess it is about the usage of your tenant.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
Right. So you need a way to automate it. Like not everything is available, for example, in Logic App or in Power Automate. So you might want to use something like CLI for Microsoft 365. That thing needs to run somewhere. And in this case, you're running that in Azure Container Instances, which is kind of like very low weight VM. Think about it, right? Yeah. So in this case, you have an end-to-end thing that allows you to run the process that you need, the logic or the app. And from there, you can get the data that you need, stored whatever you want it to.
Yep, makes perfect sense. Absolutely, absolutely. Cool stuff. Now, moving on here. Alex Clark, on SharePoint, adding time to read to modern pages. Funny enough, Power Automate, I think, was used here as well. So basically having a new property in a page and then exposing that and then using a Power Automate to estimate based on the length of the page, how long it will take to read and then update that to the value. So kind of a cool automation as well. Sure, we might want to actually have this feature natively within a product at some point, but hey. So cool way of automating things.
Yeah.
Ilya had a blog post, all good for Ilya. He had a crash on a bike pretty recently, but he is getting better, so which is really good. So now he has time to blog. So creating a PWA for your Microsoft Teams app. So basically, this is a story from the Squirrel application, which he's been building. That's his AA application. And then how to do PVA, progressive web apps, basically, as a Microsoft Teams application. So really cool stuff as well. Now, Mark D. Anderson, filtering SharePoint news pages with metadata. So how can we filter that and how things are working? How do you create the views? How do you modify things? How do you filter based on the metadata in the search result? It's the Hero web part, isn't it? It is.
Correct.
I think it is. Yes. Tom? So then you can actually build, for example, based on the metadata, based on the audience, you're going to show a different set of news, which is quite kind of a classic request from the customers. Now, in Trivial, so Caroline had a story related on Power Automate Flows, random tips and tricks and pain points. So basically migrating from a workflow 2010 to Power Automate. And there's a lot of customers looking into doing this. Not an easy thing to do. But it's nice summary on what works, what doesn't work, what are the learnings around this work. So because this is something what needs to be happening when you're moving from on-premises to the cloud, because SharePoint 2010 is no longer supported, and SharePoint 2013 workflows are even under the, I don't think they're deprecated yet, but there are signs in the air that things will be deprecated. Alex had a working with Index REST API for Office 365 story on that one, how to integrate and how to do cross references and integration with that. So cool story on there. Then we had from Waldeck, show files as a cart using Microsoft Toolkit and H2O. Quick summary from your side.
Yeah, so imagine that in your app, you wanted to show a list of files as cards. The easiest way to request. Do it. Sorry?
Quite typical request, absolutely.
Exactly, right? And easiest way to do it is using exactly MGT and H2O, which is a community-driven framework that implements the Fluent UI design. And in this article, I walk you step-by-step, like how would you use MGT? How would you extend it to use cards as opposed to default file list that it has?
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually one of the critical things what we're getting as a feedback all the time, which is the Microsoft Toolkit seems to have a lockdown UX, and the answer is no, it isn't. We're basically, you can overwrite the template in here, so it's a file list, and then we overwrite the template, which we are actually using for rendering the information. So cool sample on that. Now, Marcus Muller had a blog post related on query SharePoint items using Microsoft Graph and Search. So super important. The search APIs are in the graph. So how does that work and how you can use that? So really, really cool stuff. Ganesh Sanab had a blog post related on SharePoint Online Microsoft Lists. Ad mentioned people in list comments, something which we relatively recently released as a supported feature as well. Maybe slightly confusing. Why do we have another way of, again, having chats? But again, it might be useful for some companies and some organizations. I think people were asking that, why isn't this Microsoft Teams chat? But yeah, it gets complicated. Yeah. A few more before we close up. Creating a modern SharePoint site using Power Automate. A lot of Power Automate stuff this week from Michael Mendes from Storm Consulting, if I remember correctly. So basically, how do I create a modern SharePoint site using this? And that's the REST API call. How do I automate that? And how do I fire that from the code? And then two from the recording 365, so updates from the Microsoft Teams connected team sites, episode 199, so they're heading into episode 200 quite soon. Basically, in this message center show, Daryl and Daniel are always going through the latest what is announced within the last week as a message center update, which is kind of a cool way of keeping up to date on what's happening and what's the latest on that one. And then there was a blog post from Sarah Haas. I think, yes, that's what I thought. It was a together with Mike Fitzmaurice. So basically a discussion on what is a business process, what's the difference between business processes and automated activities. Interesting conceptual discussion for sure. Mike is actually an ex-Microsoft employee as well for more than a decade ago. So he's been around for a long time. So a lot of opinions for sure. Now let's actually stop the articles, a lot of articles this time. Now what's happening this week? Anything interesting? Let's put you, Nicole, on spot on that. What are you doing this week? Anything interesting? Building on secret stuff.
I have no secrets to share right now. We're just site templates is, you know, top of my mind right now. So we're continuing the rollout there. So hopefully more customers will be able to see it. But otherwise have some plans in the works for new features that I've been working on, but nothing to announce at this time.
There's a logical, let's say, next steps related on templates and getting more, let's say, Microsoft 365 level templates and integrations and all of that, but one step at a time. So as you say. Waldeck, anything on your side?
Always a lot, right? So I've been doing a lot of work recently with MGT, so I'll be working this week, even some more of it. So stay tuned for more updates around docs, around learning, new features and whatnot. And also, I think, if I'm not mistaken, last week we launched a new version of CLI for Microsoft 365 that allows you to really easily embed a piece of code on SharePoint page. So we do it in a way that we build for you the package. So imagine that you want to embed a Bing map on your SharePoint page. And there wasn't a first-party map web part. Or you want to embed what kind of web part? What would you want to embed that isn't available out of the box? We have weather, we have stocks, we have maps. Well, what don't we have? Tornadoes or storms.
Storm, yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, imagine. Yeah. All right. So imagine that you wanted to have that embedded on your page, right? Typically, back in the days, we had this thing called a script editor or webport, right? So you would just add the webport on a page, embed script into it, and that would be it. In modern, that is no longer the reality because of the script embedding risks. So the another way is for you to spin up new SharePoint framework, project install, all toolchain, build a project, use the code. But for that, you need
super
to be developed.
Super complex, time-consuming.
That isn't like a non-developer person wouldn't necessarily do that. So we kind of offer this middle ground where we say we have a tool for you to which you can put as input the piece of code that you want to have on a page, embed it, and then we give you a package that you can then give to your admin to install on your site. So you keep all of the security and control with the kind of ease of embedding.
Yep, that's really, really cool and highly convenient. We just need to make sure that we do I think we have a live demo scheduled already for the community call, unless I'm completely mistaken. We should have.
If we don't, then we need to, yes.
If we don't,
if
we need
we don't,
to.
Then exactly. We need to. Yes.
Anyway, and on my side, this is last week before I will have 2 weeks off, which is really cool. And Friday is actually the public holiday in Finland and whole Scandinavia because it's the midsummer big family party, which is every now and then it's a good reminder that it's weird that in Finland, this is the biggest family celebration throughout the year. In Scandinavia as a whole, nobody else has ever heard about it. It's like midsummer. What? But well, sun doesn't really sit, so it's a big thing for us.
So in other words, like you will be 2 weeks away, then on Friday you're off. Thursday is the day before Friday, so yes. You're off too. And then there'll be the longest thing, so you're not working from tomorrow, right?
Yeah. But then we're working on SharePoint Framework 1.13 release, which will hopefully get out quite soon, actually by end of this month. And it is already... let's see if this happens. It is already on 21st, so we'll see. It might actually be still shifting, but it's basically going to preview because we want to make sure that as with SharePoint Framework 1.12, we want to first release a preview version to make sure that there's no quality issues and then release the GA. And that's with the Viva Connection mobile extensibility support, which is really, really cool as well. So,
nice.
But some things to finalize still on this week. But after that, some time off, which is really good. Some family time, that's always good. But anyway, thank you, Nicole, for joining us. Thank you, really good discussion. And great to hear your history, your path, and then the future, and the whatever the site templates is happening right now. So thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And we will not come up with a new show within a week. So we will, when do we have the next
within 2 weeks? No, so I think we will be back on somewhere mid-August, I believe.
Might be, yes.
Around that time.
So we will have a pretty big break on the PMP weeklies, but we'll be back in autumn on the season 4. So stay tuned. Thank you. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.